Any other questions for Ed? Go ahead.
Ed, welcome to Vancouver. I remember your days of C.J. Lawrence and your charts. If you could share with the room three favorite charts right now that we should be following.
What's the question?
He was just talking about your Roaring Twenties chart book there that's on everyone's table.
Yeah. Your three favorites.
If you had three favorite charts in that.
Well, that's a great question. Thank you very much. Remind me to give you the gift I promised you later. take a look near the end, actually. I really should put this in the front. Look at figure 15 and 16. These charts are beautiful. They're artworks. They're for sale as NFPs. You can own a piece of it. You know, everything's going to get tokenized. I mean, that's the next big revolution in finance. But figure 15 shows you that the American household sector is currently sitting on over $160 trillion of net worth, assets minus liabilities. And half of that is held by the baby boomers. The baby boomers have over $80 trillion, trillion not billions, $80 trillion of net worth. And this proves that the baby boomers were properly raised by Spock. I'm not talking about Dr. Benjamin Spock. Apparently, our parents read Benjamin Spock, and they spoiled us, and you know we became rotten, greedy materialists. No, let's not go there. But so the baby boomers, what the baby boomers did is they listened. We listened to Spock from Star Trek, where he said, you know, live long and prosper. There's a lot of debate in the United States about income inequality and wealth inequality. And it never really addresses to me the most obvious reason for that, and that is the baby boomers. We've lived long and prospered. You know, if you buy a house early on in your life and along the way, maybe some have pensions, others just have 401ks, you buy some stock, you buy some life insurance, and then you pay off your mortgage as you get older. You know, say, you know, I'm doing well enough now that maybe I don't need to be paying this monthly outlay. And so the baby boomers have followed the notion of live long and prosper. And, of course, living long allows for the compounding of returns on the assets you have. So, and then, of course, now the parents of the baby boomers are passing away. And it's the silent generation, and so there's some of them are getting that inheritance. Now, I'm a baby boomer. I'm still working for a living because I got married three times and had five kids, so you know I'm an optimist. But my friends are carefree. They're retiring. They only married once. They have a couple of adult kids. They're married. They got grandchildren. And I can see from them and my own experience that we're helping the youngins. Okay, so I got my daughter in Toronto, Laura, she's the youngest, and she and David are the youngest, and David's in Boston, and they graduated from college a couple of years ago, one from Quinnipiac, the other from University of Delaware. Laura has a boyfriend that she and he are up in Toronto. He plays lacrosse professionally, has a day job too. When Laura graduated, at graduation day, in front of her, I said, "Yes, you're off my budget. This is the greatest day of my life. No more. No, all five kids are out of college." I said, Dad, I didn't get a job yet. I'm still going to live at home. You know, I'll try to find." So she found a good job in Long Island, still living at home. And David had some problems finding a job, and so I finally hired him and said, "I'm feeling so guilty because I used to knock on his door screaming, 'David, get off the computer, go out, it's a nice day, you know, let's play ball, let's do something.' And now I'm kind of feeling guilty about that because he's a whiz kid on the computer, so he does all these charts for me now, so it's worked out very well." So Laura got a job, she's making like 50 grand, which is what, you know, that's what kids coming out of school get. If they get a job, so that's pretty good. We're proud of her. But then I told my wife, you know, I don't want, you know, once they get a job, they're out of here. And to help him get out of there, I said, look, I'm going to, you know, they had two cars that were kind of college clunkers, you know. So I said, I'm going to get him new cars, not brand new cars, but used cars. And the prices for them are like, you know, Subaru or Cherokee is about $25,000, $30,000. Call up the auto insurance company, say, okay, here's the car. Said, okay, $5,000 a year per person, per kid. So it's like, there's no way she could afford that, you know. There's no way she was going to be able to afford the car. So I personally, and for my friends, I can see there's a lot of intragenerational support going on, maybe mortgage payments, maybe mortgage itself, maybe grandchildren's, writing lessons or, you know, ballet or whatever. And so I think there's a lot of that that's kind of being missed. So I really like this chart because it says, hey, at some point we are going to die, and there will be a lot of huge amount of inheritance for the kids. And so I think that's what's keeping the economy going. It's one of the areas of resilience. And so my friends go on these cruises, and figure 16, what's relevant there is they go on cruises and they text me, Ed, wish you could join us. I know you get seasick, but you really should take something in. We took premium class. It's been unbelievable. All you can eat, great entertainment. And the best thing of all is we keep looking at our cell phones for our portfolio, and it just keeps going up. So we're spending all this money, and our net worth is going up because the stock market's going up. It's a generation that's really having a great run here. And so I think consumers spending remains relatively strong. A similar story is available here on the capital spending. And look at figure 10. Figure 10, we're looking at, this is capital spending in GDP accounts adjusted for inflation. So it's real capital spending. And, you know, during recessions, capital spending goes down. Here it's absolutely flying to the moon. And, yeah, some of it's data centers, but spending on data centers is offsetting the drop in construction of office buildings because, you know, because of COVID, people are working from home. The whole work concept of where you work has changed. But data centers are strong. Semiconductor sales are strong. And so if you look at the next chart, figure 11, you can see that more than 50% of capital spending is on technology. And this is the digital revolution. Back in the mid-60s, IBM mainframes, we spent about 20%. So that's been a big story. I guess I'm most proud of the last chart here. On figure 20, that's the one I was just describing to you, and it shows you my high-powered skills of technical analysis. But dang, it's really worked this time. I wish I'd just put it all in. Looks like if this is correct, then we're sort of at the top end of a channel. We may do some consolidation as we did only a few months ago. And then we cross 4,000, I think, goes to 5,000. And I'm going to extend this to 1929 and see where those two lines end up. But I wouldn't be surprised if it's close to 10,000.
Why don't we we'll take one more just so we don't keep everyone too long, and we will hang around after if people have other questions. But go ahead, sir.
You made some comments on the general market multiples, 22.
Yeah.
So it's come up from 17, 18, which has been the historic. So is the market overly optimistic about the earnings growth? Is it just because of sheer amount of money coming into the game? Right. Or is will the earnings growth be as good as the multiples are dictating it should be? What's your view?
Well, I think we have to go to that word resilience. I think the valuation multiple shows that investors have sort of bought into our view that the economy's proven its resilience. So why not bet on it? Why not bet that we may not have a recession for a while, since we've already had one that never happened? And so I think it's reasonable to believe that if you have a conviction that there's not going to be a recession for the next several years, then you're going to pay a higher multiple than if you thought there's a recession any day now. Or usually when you get a recession and a bear market, bear markets are associated with recessions, the multiple can get down to 5 to 10, which would be a disaster here, obviously.
Some of this big rally in the last while has been multiples going from 17 days, 25% of the rally is multiples expansion.
Yeah, exactly. I would say one thing, though. When the stock market took a dive in 2020 because of the lockdowns, and then the Fed came in, and then we had that V-shaped recovery back then. V-shaped recoveries aren't that unusual in our lifetime. They seem to be happening more often. But when we fully recovered to where we had been in February of 2020, so, you know, it was like it never happened. From that point, by the way, the multiple got up to 22 at that point. I guess everybody figured, hey, the Fed's going to pour in liquidity. They saved us. We went to 22, and now we're 22 again. I mean, there's a lot of action in between. What that means is that the stock market, since that point, is up 100%. The S&P 500 is up 100%, and earnings are up 100%. So earnings have been a huge story. And I would say, if the market kind of buys into our story that the economy may not have a recession for a while, then 22 should be sustainable. Makes me a little bit nervous. I mean, I think we'd all like to see a cheaper market, but the market doesn't do what we want it to do. I think there's a question here.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, the question is about profit margins, and profit margins have been, you know, almost miraculous. I mean, you just haven't seen. We have the chart here on the profit margin. If the first one who finds it gets a free trip to Washington, D.C. to meet President Trump. Okay, let's go to... Nobody raised their hands. Figure six. You missed a great opportunity.
I was trying hard. I'd never been to D.C.
You know, last May I hired a fellow by Eric Wallerstein. His name was Eric Wallerstein. He's a 27-year-old kid. He was a ace reporter for the Wall Street Journal. I like the way he wrote. I they'll take me out in a box. I'm not retiring, but it would be kind of nice to have somebody that could take over for me if I get run over by a truck. And so Eric was perfect. He had been at the Federal Reserve Bank of New York during the pandemic, and he traded repos, so he really got, you know, some hands-on experience with financial markets. Then May, 1 year later, May of this year, Eric tells me he's leaving, he's quitting, that he got an offer to be the senior advisor to Stephen Moran, the head of the Council of Economic Advisers. So, well, I can't blame you, you know, you should definitely take it. So, I figured I had him on the inside, you know, working the roaring 2020s. So we'll see if he makes a difference there. But so maybe you can meet Eric. I don't know if...
Okay.
Eric, I think I can get you. But figure six is the profit margin, and the red line is a weekly proxy for it, and it's telling us that the profit margin is probably going to be at a record high in the third quarter. So, yeah, I think that helps the valuation multiple. We just had another one of these shocks, which is the tariff shock, and yet companies' earnings have been phenomenal. In the first quarter, the second quarter, profit margins have held up. So you kind of ask yourself, man, this thing seems to be almost bulletproof. What else could hit it? I mean, the Fed's not going to be raising interest rates here. And if it makes a mistake and lowers rates, we might have a melt up. Could have a meltdown following that, but that'll be a buying opportunity. I don't think it'll be like the painful one that occurred after 1999.
Okay, we got one more for you, Sean.
A little curious about if we could explore a little further the state of the Federal Reserve insofar as Powell seems to be able to fight Trump off until he leaves in May. But it seems very, very evident that Trump will put inflammatory rhetoric perhaps, but he's going to put another sycophant in as the head of the Federal Reserve. And I suspect that Trump will exert pressure to reduce short-term interest rates in anticipation of the midterm elections 12 months later. Is this I live in fear of that. I live in fear that there's a crisis of confidence in the integrity of the Federal Reserve, and the integrity of interest rate policy, and the integrity of long-term inflation targets, and that bond investors around the world at some point take flight. Am I being overly concerned about that risk?
I mean, there's lots of things to be concerned. Obviously, it's a legitimate concern to worry about the independence of the Fed. If Trump got his scenario today, the Fed funds rate would be 1%. Because the Fed is under his control, Bessent would be frustrated that the bond yield hasn't cooperated, so he'd issue more and more in the bond market, in the bill market, figuring then, you know, whenever the bond market finally recognizes that Trump is always right about everything, and miraculously the bond market bond yield comes down, then they refinance from the bill market to the bond market. But meanwhile, you'd have like an insane speculative bubble in everything. Gold is like the gift that keeps on giving. I mean, the damn thing just won't go down. It'll go down. It was down today, but you never had like a huge, scary downdraft. And the stock market's the same way. It's kind of a slow motion melt up in the markets. They're kind of tippy toeing to a higher and higher levels. But it is concerning the issue of the independence. I have to tell you, I told my IT guy, and I have one guy doing it remotely. I said, I know you're pretty good at ChatGPT. Can you do a graphic of Trump and Powell with the hard hats? Remember that hard hats where Powell looked totally depressed, almost suicidal? So I said, put me in the picture, too, with a hard hat. And it's a magnificent picture. And I was going to post it and said, do I really want to do that? You know, but, I mean, it's just a beautiful picture, you know, me, Powell, and Trump looking over the construction site. But it is unnerving. I'm annoyed because I would do it for half the price. I think the independence is important. Right now, the financial markets are la 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 la. You know, who really cares? A big deal. Maybe the Fed doesn't matter as much. Maybe interest rates don't matter as much as we're making it out to be. The consumers have all this money to spend for the retirees. The IT thing is sort of on its own. They're generating, the hyperscalers are generating so much cash they could either buy back their shares or, you know, keep expanding, and they've chosen to expand. So it's not like a debt bubble. If it was a debt bubble, it'd be much, much, much scarier. So it's, you know, put it on the worry list for sure, but don't worry, be happy. It's a good note to end on, right?
It's a great note to end on. Ed, I can't thank you enough and everyone else here for attending. We've covered a lot of ground. Appreciate it. Yeah. Thank you.